welcome. It's Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you broadcasts from radio's golden years. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. There's comedy in this hour, later on the Jack Benny Show from 1952. But first, a relatively rare broadcast of Milton Berle's Kiss and Make Up, an audience participation show from March 4th, 1946 on CBS.
Columbia presents Milton Berle and his guest star, Jackie Coogan, in a new comedy show, Kiss and Make Up.
My husband eats crackers in bed.
You'll drive me crazy.
My neighbor plays his radio all night long.
You'll drive me crazy.
My wife goes through my pockets every night.
You'll drive me crazy.
Yes, tonight petty grievances like these will be tried in a new court of justice, Columbia's Court of Petty Grievances, where the petty thing is the important thing. Here in our courtroom, you, the listeners, are invited to appear in person before an impartial jury selected from our studio audience. You'll be given a chance to air your grievances against each other, and if your complaint is a legitimate and petty one, you may receive cash damages up to $48. And to make sure that each case receives a fair trial, presiding over our court is his honor, Judge Milton Berle.
Remember, Judge Berle spelled backwards is Alcatraz.
And now, let us look into the judge's private chambers adjoining the courtroom, where his honor, Judge Milton Berle, dressed in the traditional black robe, is somberly contemplating a bust of Socrates. Listen.
Socrates, today I am a judge. Gee, this is the happiest day of my life. To think me, Milton Berle, little Milty Berle, is a judge. Gee, if my mama could only see me now, dressed up in this big black robe, I bet I look like a million in it. Oh, here's a mirror. I'll ask the mirror. Mirror, mirror on the wall. Who is the fairest judge of all? And the mirror replied, Milty. Little Milty Berle is the fairest. Not only. Berle is the fairest.
I still take Snow White.
Oh, it's the bailiff. Hello, you startled me for a minute. I was just adjusting my robe in the mirror.
With an eyebrow tweezer?
An eyebrow tweezer. I just use that for, you know, these black robes gather a lot of dust. You gotta keep picking and picking.
I'm surprised at you, Judge Berle.
Judge Berle. See, that reminds me. I gotta have some new cards printed up for myself. Let's see. What should I call myself? Judge Berle. No, that's too short.
Let me see.
Judge Milton Berle. No. Not enough dignity. Judge Milton Berle, Esquire. How does that sound, bailiff?
Judge Milton Berle, Esquire? Yeah. Why the Esquire?
Got to have something to read while I'm sitting on the bench. Anybody knows that.
Now, Judge, you're new around here, and I don't know how you'll take to this judge business.
Bailiff, have no fear. The old Berle is dead. You are now looking at the new Berle. Why, do you know that since I got this job, I feel different all over. Just look at me in the mirror. Look at me. Look at those hard blue eyes, that determined chin, those sensitive lips. I can hardly recognize myself.
That's not a mirror. That's a picture of Napoleon you're looking at.
I wondered what that horse was doing under me.
Well, you may joke around, Your Honor, but underneath I can see you're very nervous.
You're right. I'm terribly nervous, bailiff. All morning I've been nail biting.
Well, that can't hurt you.
Can't. These nails are in the woodwork. You meet the most interesting termites that way. Frankly, bailiff, the thing that really worries me is my robe. You know, material is very difficult to get these days.
Well, where'd you get that robe?
Oh, just took one of my old shower curtains and dyed it black.
Well, what's that big hump in the back?
My brother's in there taking a shower. I wish he'd stop jumping around.
Now, listen, Jan, and I'll be serious. I feel that as your bailiff, I should tell you something about your duties as a judge.
Duties as a judge? For instance, what?
Well, for instance, in handling the judge's gavel, you must be very careful.
But what's so complicated about handling a gavel?
Well, there's definite rules. For example, when you rap once, that's for silence in the court.
Yes, yes.
And when you rap twice, that's to call the court to order.
I see.
But whatever you do, never rap it three times.
Why not?
The handle will fly off.
Well, be sure to get that gavel fixed. But enough of that, bailiff. It's time to go in the courtroom and try our petty case of D. I hope I don't make any mistakes.
Hear ye! Hear ye! All persons having business with the court of petty grievances on this night of March 4th, draw near and you shall be heard. Judge Milton Berle presiding. Everybody sing.
In the court. I want you to remember all these things. One, in my court, the judge is not fixed. Two, the jury is not fixed. Three, the gavel's not fixed. Bailiff, bailiff.
I told you not to knock it three times.
Now he tells me. Bailiff, call the first case.
Your Honor, before I call the first case of petty grievances, do you wish to examine the jury?
Oh, certainly. Jury, stick out your tongues and say ah. Oh, examine the jury. I'm sorry. Of course. Seriously, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, you have been selected impartially from the audience to serve on jury duty in our court of petty grievances. Remember, the cases that you will hear before you tonight are completely unrehearsed and are real cases. Now, in reward for your services, each one of you will receive $5 when court adjoins. Pretty penny. A pretty penny. To say nothing of an ugly nickel. Bailiff, call the first case.
The case of Mr. Myers versus Mrs. Kissel. Step up to the bar and meet the judge.
How do you do, Mr. Myers and Mr. Kissel? Welcome to the Court of Petty Grievances. Before we go any further, where do you folks live?
Brooklyn.
Brooklyn, I see. You have a grievance there right now.
That's the first grievance.
Now, I'll tell you, here's the way the whole thing works. You each will be given a chance to state your grievance and defend yourself. Your case will then be decided upon a jury of 12 people. Each member of the jury voting in your favor is worth $2 to you. You understand that? So remember, present your arguments as strongly as you know how, because it means money in your pocket. All right, Mr. Myers, state your grievance.
Well, Your Honor, Mrs. Kissel, who comes to my laundry, who calls me up for take
you
her bundle.
Have a laundry, Mr.?
Yes, sir. And
I'll see you after the show.
We are taking new customers now.
You're not, huh?
We are.
Well, that takes the starch out of you. Go ahead.
And when she calls me up to pick up her bundle, she always is at least an hour late. And on Monday, when I have to come back again, every minute counts.
You never come in time.
And something else. I usually there in time.
No, sir.
I'd like to present an exhibit to the court, if I may.
Exhibit?
Well,
that's not
towel.
Mine.
And she claims she lost
that's
a brand new one.
No, wait.
And what about the lawsuit?
Now, wait a minute. Let me understand this, Mr. Myers, is it?
But can yes. I say something?
Yes, you'll have a chance to say something. Mr. Myers, we give everybody a fair trial at this court. Mr. Myers, you say you own the laundry, and she said, I didn't understand your case thoroughly. You've talked.
Well, she always complains about missing things out of her bundle. And whenever she misses
something.
Whenever
you deliver a bundle, there's always something missing.
It's always brand new.
And positively it's brand new.
Well, now, let Miss Kissel say something. What have you got to say about this?
Every time he delivers a bundle, there's always something missing. And what about the 5 handkerchiefs you lost the last time?
Your count could be wrong also.
No, it isn't. I always count it right.
You never make a mistake.
I went to day school. I didn't
is
go
that
to
your,
night school.
Is that your mark in that pillowcase?
No, it isn't. You marked it. You put my mark on the pillowcase.
Well, of course, you set the pillowcase in.
Well, listen.
And, Your Honor, it's a torn pillowcase, and
that
she claims a brand
mine.
New one.
It isn't hers, she said. It isn't hers.
There is her mark.
I just replenished all my linen.
Well, I have proof of it in the store that all her linens are marked
that
way.
Well, he didn't mark it wrong, too.
All right. Evidence presented. Wait a minute. The case now goes to the jury. All the juries who think that Mr. Meyer deserves damages, raise your right hand. And remember, each hand is worth $2 for Mr. Myers. All right? We have 1, 2, 3, 4. 4 hands raised. That's $8 for Mr. Myers. You get $8 money in your pocket, Mr. Myers. And Mrs. Kissel, let me see. That remains 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. That don't raise your hand, please, Mrs. Kissel. That's 8 hands raised.
Why
that's $16
for Mrs. Kissel. And that's money in your pocket. While the bailiff counts the money, Mr. Myers and Mrs. Kissel, in tradition of the Court of Petty Grievances, you must now kiss and make up. Go ahead, kiss him. That was very cute, wasn't it? Sort of kissle and make up, that was. Lovely couple. They were made for each other, weren't they? Bailiff, next case, please.
Case of Mrs. Boston versus Mr. Boston. Step up to the bar and meet the judge.
How do you do? Step up to the bar. Welcome to Kiss. We're not going to serve any drinks, if that's what you mean. Welcome to Kiss and Makeup's Court of Petty Grievances. Now, you're married, you two, is that right?
I think we are.
Very much so, Your Honor. Very much so.
Wesson says that.
Well, where do you folks live?
Manhattan.
Whereabouts?
92nd Street.
92nd Street, I see. You're Mrs. Boston?
That's right.
And you're Mr. Boston, huh?
Very much so.
How are all
very
the little baked so. Beans?
There's only one.
You only have one child.
That's right.
Well, I see you smiling, but you must have a grievance, either one of you. You know how our court works. So remember, present your argument so as strongly as you know how, because it means money in your pocket. All right, now, before we go any further, who has the grievance?
I have the grievance, Judge Burrell.
You have the grievance?
That's right.
Well, what is it? Will you state your case, please?
Yes, I certainly will.
Right.
My husband likes to read...
What?
Well, my husband likes to read the paper to
yappity,
table.
Yappity,
just
yappity,
a minute,
yappity,
please.
He likes... That's what I have to contend with.
All right.
With.
Would you
let
please
Mrs.
Wait
Boston
a minute.
Talk, please?
I don't mind if he'd read a small newspaper.
Let me understand this. He reads what?
He reads the large newspapers at the breakfast table.
Yeah?
Now, that means a waste of coffee, a waste of sugar, and that's a very hard thing to get sugar. Very hard. Now, I'll try to explain
and
Judge, Your Honor,
that.
Could you stand
just
for
a minute.
Well,
wait a minute.
Please. Your Honor, I used since we've been...
Wait a minute, please. Just a minute. Knocking over the microphone. What did you say, Mrs. Boston?
Well, since we've been married, I've been putting the sugar into his coffee. And then he's got his nose in the paper so much...
That he can't get it in the coffee.
Someday he will.
Yeah?
That he sugars it again, and then he's complained it's too
it's
sweet.
It's the same old story, day
please,
in,
just
day
a minute.
Out. I hear the short
man. And then I have to go and throw the coffee out, and I have to give him fresh coffee with more sugar. That's about 6 teaspoons of
all
sugar.
All right, now we'll
table.
Give Mr. Boston a chance.
That's impossible if it's argument. My
he's
wife
no
wins before we
will
start.
Will you let him talk, Mrs. Boston, please? Everybody has a fair trial here, Mr. Boston.
No, if this is a case of argument, I just don't stand a chance of winning, because my wife always, always, always gets in the last word, and the first
well,
year.
The last word. Every time I say something to him... Every time I say something with the
well, now
please
you're,
don't.
Now
he goes
you're
to the
petty
bathroom.
Grievance. You all shut her up, Your Honor. This goes on indefinitely.
That's the judge's fault. Here is the gavel. You go to work. I heard everything. Evidence presented. The case now goes to the jury. All of you who think that Mrs. Boston deserves damages, raise your right hands, and remember, each hand is worth $2 for Mrs. Boston, all right? I see. One, two, three. Three hands raised, that means $6 to you, Mrs. Boston. Money in your pocket. And Mr. Boston? One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. Seven. That's seven hands for Mr. Boston.
I'm sure, Judge, that all the jurors are married. They know my case.
Well, that's seven hands for you. That's $14 for you, Mr. Boston. That's money in your pocket. And I don't know how this is going to work now, but in tradition of the Court of Petty Grievances, you must now kiss and make up. Go ahead. Okay. Oh, lovely couple. I now proceed, Tony Marlin.
Well, this is a case of Mr. and Mrs. America versus inflation.
Go on.
My client, Mr. and Mrs. America, feel that inflation is imminent, and they want to do something about it.
Come to the point. Just what is the grievance?
Mr. and Mrs. America have a grievance against those thoughtless individuals who, by their excessive, reckless spending, are inviting inflation, which must quickly lead to economic ruin.
The decision of the court is an obvious one. You tell Mr. and Mrs. America not to cash in their old war bonds, but to continue to purchase new bonds, because a United States war bond is one of the best safeguards against inflation. The decision of the court is to buy United States saving bonds. Bailiff, what's the next case on the calendar?
It's not exactly a case, Judge, but as you know, each week on Kiss and Make Up, Your Honor awards $25 cash for the letter which you have selected as the most unusual petty grievance of the week.
Oh, yes, yes, the most unusual petty grievance of the week. Yes, and here's the letter. Here's the letter sent by Mrs. Collins of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. She writes, "Dear Judge Burrell, my petty grievance is against motion pictures because of the effect that they have on my husband. After every picture he sees, my husband Harry imagines he's the hero, and sometimes he gets a little difficult. For instance, after he saw a gangster picture starring Alan Ladd, Harry didn't shave for 3 days. Then he got himself a water pistol and began robbing Junior's piggy bank. And those Betty Grable pictures. It was after seeing a Betty Grable picture that Harry came home, took one look at me, and decided to sell our love seat. Once after a Tarzan picture, Harry came home, filled the bathtub with water, then jumped in and wrestled with my crocodile handbag. That's a good joke. I wish I'd have thought of it. A funny thing, after Harry sees a Jack Carson picture, he acts like Carson. After he sees a Charlie Chan picture, he acts like Charlie Chan. I can hardly wait for Harry to see the new Clark Gable picture. Honest, Judge Burrell, I get scared whenever Harry goes to see a Mickey Mouse picture. I'm afraid the next morning I'll wake up and find my Harry in the mousetrap. Signed, Mrs. Collins. Thank you. Mrs. Collins, thanks for your very unusual petty grievance. You will receive a $25 check in the morning, and in keeping with our tradition of kiss and makeup, I know that I can trust you to kiss your postman. Bailiff, call the next case.
The case of Mr. Hertz versus Mrs. Hertz. Step up to the bar and meet the judge.
How do you do? Welcome to the Court of Petty Grievances, Mr. and Mrs. Hertz, huh?
Yes, that's
you're married, no doubt.
Yes, we are.
Yeah. Oh, where do you folks live?
Brooklyn.
Yes, we live in Brooklyn.
What part of Brooklyn? Flatbush?
Yeah, well, no, not right near Prospect Park.
Prospect Park. Now, before we go any further, we are going to give you a fair trial. You're in our Court of Petty Grievances, and we're only out to help people. Who has the grievance?
I have, Your Honor.
You have?
I have.
Will you state your case, please?
Now, my wife, you know, when I go to bed,
yeah,
it takes me an hour or 2 hours to fall asleep.
Yeah.
And when my wife goes to bed, why, she sleeps in a half an hour, she starts to snore. She snores so that I have to shake her a few times.
Yeah.
And she wakes, and all of a sudden she goes back. I can't sleep. Now, it takes me an hour or 2 hours before I fall asleep.
That is your complaint, mister.
That's my complaint,
you can't
yes.
fall asleep.
And then she turns around and says, "Why, you snore. You're the one that's snoring." She says to me, after me awake, takes me an hour or two before
all
I
right.
fall asleep.
Yes, I know. Well, you know, it's... May I interrupt just a minute?
Yes.
As the judge, you know, it's very difficult to know who's snoring when one is sleeping. You know what I mean? What have you got to say, Mrs. Hurd?
Well, he's mistaking. I do not snore. He snores. He's terrible. He snores and smokes late at night, and that's why it keeps him awake. It keeps him awake, and then he snores, and he watches, and then after when he sleeps, he snores something terrible. Why,
you know,
he makes a terrible noise.
Wait a minute. In a minute, I'll hold you contempt of snort. Yeah.
Tell you how he snores?
Yes, I'd like...
Just like a sawmill.
How would you say? Would you do that once more, please? All right, now...
And another thing he snores just like a pig. Sounds like a pig to me.
Sounds like a pig. You've been married how long, you folks?
42 years.
And you just found out he snores.
Yes. Listen, I do not snore.
You're right. Now, evidence. Evidence presented. The case now goes to the jury and the question. Jury, the question in this case seems to me, what's worse, for a man to snore or a woman to snore? All those who feel that it's proper for Mr. Hertz to snore, raise your hand. Raise your hands, all those. Wait a minute. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10 hands in your favor, Mr. Snertz. Mr. Snertz, I said. Mr. Hertz. Which means that you have $20. Now, Mr. Hertz, it's just too bad that you couldn't sway the other two jurors and make it unanimous, but I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're very fair. Because you were that close, I'll give you 10 seconds to see if you can convince the other two jurors and make them change their minds. If you can do this, the court will double the amount that you would receive.
Well, making the other...
it... Wait a minute, just a minute, please. You're a little too anxious to snore, you know that. Making it $48, $24 from the jury and $24 from the court. All right now, Mr. Hertz, you have 10 seconds to win that extra $28. Appeal your case.
Well, if the other two jurors...
Hurry up, you got 10
would
seconds.
Would please see that I should make a dollar or so where I need it, that they would be with me. I'd plead to them, to the highest, that they should be with me to make a little more than it.
All right, that did it. Mr. Hertz, you did it. You received $24 from a unanimous decision from the jury, and for your magnificent appeal, the court doubles that amount.
Thank you very much.
Wait till I tell you how much it is, please. Boy, all your money's tied up in cash. $48, which means money... In a minute, I'll have to split that with you, you know it. Which means money in your pocket. Now, just a minute. Now, Mrs. Hertz is standing right here at our bar, and I see, Mrs. Hertz, that you're sort of downcast.
Yes,
because
I am.
You are, huh? Well, I didn't give you a chance to appeal,
and therefore you
lost your $4. So I'm going to tell you what we're going to do. The court will correct this error by giving you the $4 that you lost. Is that all right?
Very nice.
Mr. and Mrs. Hertz, after 42 years, you shouldn't argue anymore. And you know the tradition of the court, kiss and make up. Go ahead, do that. Isn't that cute? Come on. I think that's... Bailiff, what is the next case?
The case of Jackie Coogan versus Mr. and Mrs. American Public. Step forward and meet the judge.
Well, if it isn't Jackie Coogan, the kid himself.
Oh, the kid. You said it. Everybody calls me the kid. Nobody seems to realize that I've grown up. I tell you, I'm not a kid anymore, and if this keeps on, I'll go mad.
Now, wait a minute. I'm sorry. Here, kid, come up here. Sit on my lap. Bailiff.
Yes, sir?
Here's a quarter. Run out and get a couple of lollipops for the kid.
Oh, Judge Burrow, that's my grievance. That's why I'm here in court. Listen, do I look like a kid? Take a look at this bald head and tell me.
Well, to be truthful with you, Jackie, you look like the Surrey with no fringe on top. Tell me, Jackie, what's happened to your hair?
Well, when I went into the Army, I had a beautiful head of hair.
Oh, I see. And with the Army point system, your hair got out before you did. Jackie, what the jury wants to know is how you lost your hair.
Oh, how I lost my
yes.
hair. Well, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, here's what happened. Every morning when the bugler blew his horn, my sergeant blew his whistle, and I blew my top.
Quiet. This is getting to sound like the court of missing hairs. But, Jack... tell me, just what is your grievance?
Oh, Judge, I just hate being called a kid. I played that role in the movies 27 years ago, and now at 31, people still call me the kid. Even at home, they treat me as a kid. Every night, my special nurse puts me to bed, tucks me in, and kisses me goodnight. Isn't that terrible?
Kid, you may not know it, but you're living. And good, yes.
Oh, but, Judge, I'm a man, I tell you. Why, I began shaving at the age of 12.
That proves nothing. Anybody who goes 12 straight years without shaving has to grow a beard.
Oh, but Judge Burl, this kid stuff is getting me down. Every time I go to a newspaper stand and ask for a magazine, they hand me a copy of Child Life. I'm not interested in Child Life.
What are you interested in?
Wildlife. Hubba, hubba, hubba.
If you were a Boy Scout, Jackie, you'd probably be in the Wolf Patrol. Cubba, cubba, cubba. Now, as this is the Court of Petty Grievances, you must have a specific grievance against a specific person.
Yes, well, I have, Your Honor. And to show you how the American public mistreats me by calling me the kid, I asked the court to subpoena Mrs. Mildred Wintergreen.
Mrs. Mildred Wintergreen, step to the bar.
Jackie, just what is your complaint against Mrs. Wintergreen?
Well, it's this way, Your Honor. I'm standing in a Walgreens drugstore drinking my chocolate mulled. This woman comes up to me and she yells,
"It's Jackie Coogan, the kid! He's so adorable!"
Oh, shut up!
Order! Proceed, Jackie, proceed.
I will. Well, then she grabs me by the collar, throws me over her shoulder, and right in front of everybody, this dame starts burping me.
Oh, he's so adorable.
Oh, lady, you get my hair.
Your hair? Jackie, if she ever got in your hair, she'd freeze to death. Now, madam. Madam, what have you got to say about that charge?
He's so adorable.
Shut up.
Order. Order.
Your Honor, I meant no harm, because I still think of Jackie Coogan as being about Margaret O'Brien's age.
Margaret O'Brien? Well, I'm old enough to be her father.
She's rich enough to be your mother.
Well, Your Honor, you know, I got it. I can prove I'm not a kid.
Take the teething ring out of your mouth, Jackie, and tell us how.
Well, I'll tell you, easy. I asked the court to select out of this courtroom, as Exhibit A, any child.
You want a child out of the courtroom?
Mm-hmm.
What'll that prove?
Well, I'll talk to the kid, and you'll be able to see that he and I will have nothing in common, because as a youngster, why, he'll be interested in yo-yos, tops, marbles, jacks, and boats. You know,
that's an excellent idea. Bailiff.
Yes, sir?
Summon a child from the courtroom audience to appear as a witness, please.
Will any young child please step up here and meet the judge?
I will.
Here I am.
Right,
I'm a child.
Little boy, come up here. Thank you for coming up. Step right over there, please, and right over to the bar. Don't be afraid of anything, please. Don't get nervous. First time at the bar, huh? Tell me, what is your name, son?
Edward Stanton, Your Honor.
Edward Stanton.
Yes,
and how old are you, Edward?
12 years old.
12 years old. All right, Jackie, your witness. Engage the lad in conversation.
Just fine. A 12-year-old child. Well, I'll prove to the court in a minute that I'm an adult compared to this hunk of pablum bait. Now, sonny, what would you like to talk about? Marbles?
Marbles? Certainly, why not? It's an interesting idiosyncrasy of adolescent childhood. They contemplate how asymmetrical fears of graduated proportions can be the nearest approach to a parasympathetic system. Parasympathetic system, that is. Is that clear, Your Honor? Is that clear, Your Honor?
Oh, Natalie, yeah.
Mr. Coogan.
Yes,
Coogan, am I making myself clear?
You're making yourself obnoxious.
Fine, that's how it should be. However, we must take into consideration the psychiatric approach to our problem, which, when visualized in a paradoxically graduated curvature, becomes synonymous with the usual geometric devices for arriving at a profound concatenation of the third cube root. Third cube root, that is. Judge Burl, do you understand my point? I say, do you understand my point?
Yeah!
Jackie, Coogan, what do you say?
Well, I'm leaving.
Where are you going?
Home. It's time for my 2 o'clock bottle.
Goodbye. Goodbye, Jackie. Jackie, you're the only veteran I know who went from battle to bottle in one easy discharge. But ladies and gentlemen of the Kiss and Makeup jury, I'm not going to ask you to return a verdict on Jackie Coogan's grievance because I know that you feel the same as I do, that Jackie Coogan must always be cherished in our hearts and memories as just the kid. Tony,
Tony, are there any more petty grievances to be heard?
Well, not until next week, Your Honor, at which time Columbia's Kiss and Makeup program will convene its Court of Petty Grievances to judge and award cash damages up to $48.
Kiss and Makeup, on Tuned to Yesterday from March 4th, 1946 on CBS. In the days before he was Mr. Television, it would be about a year after that broadcast before he would have his own program on NBC called The Milton Berle Show. You're listening to an hour of comedy on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for The Jack Benny Show, a CBS broadcast from the 2nd of March, 1952.
From Palm Springs, California, The Jack Benny Program with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Rochester, Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, we're broadcasting from Palm Springs, California. This being such a romantic spot, I'd like to make the opening introduction with a little poem.
A poem?
Nestled in the hills, far away from care, is a place we go to breathe the desert air. And there, out by the pool, far from strife and toil, is our blue-eyed star selling suntan oil. And here he is, Jack Benny.
Thank you. Hello again, this is Jack Benny talking, and Don, since we're in a poetic mood, I've written a poem for you, too.
Oh, you have?
Yes. I did not like your jingle, and if one more joke you tell, it's Bon Voyage, Don Wilson, and Welcome Home, Von Zell. Let's not have any more of your poems, eh, Henry Wadsworth, fat fellow?
Now, wait a minute, Jack. If you get fresh with me, I'll follow you around all day and keep you in the shade.
Oh, yes. Yes, I'm sorry. Well, anyway, it's sure good to get back to Palm Springs, isn't it, Don?
Yes, Jack. I always have a wonderful time here.
I do, too, particularly because a fellow can have such privacy here. You know, Don, yesterday I passed a big crowd in front of the drugstore, and not one person turned around or even bothered to look at me.
Really? Well, Jack, why were there such a crowd gathered?
They were getting Eddie Cantor's autograph. Imagine.
But, Jack, if you say people here have so much privacy, why did they ask Eddie Cantor for his autograph?
They didn't ask him.
They didn't?
No. Don, when a man stops you on the street, sings two choruses of Ida, then stamps his name on your forehead, there's nothing you can do about it. What an eager beaver.
Jack, you're just mad at Eddie because he beat you on the golf course yesterday.
Sure, but he wouldn't have beaten me if he'd have played fair.
Fair?
Yes, imagine this, Don. When we both got on the last green, just as I was getting ready to putt, he put down a dime to mark his ball.
What's wrong with that?
He divided my point of interest. Then when I missed the putt, I got so mad I took a swing at the dime and sliced it right into my pocket. The first hole in one I ever made. Anyway, Don, I'm glad you mentioned golf because tonight our program is dedicated to the formal opening of the new Tamarisk Country Club here in Palm Springs. And it's really one of the most beautiful golf...
Hey, pardon me, but does this dull twosome mind if a funny man plays through?
Oh!
Hiya, folks.
Well, look who's here. Sir Thomas Beecham. Say, Phil, Don and I were just talking about Tamarisk, the beautiful new golf course. Since you're such a good golfer, Phil, you'll love it.
Yeah, I know, Jackson. I played in the tournament out there yesterday. It is. It's a great course.
I thought I saw you out there yesterday, Phil. You were playing with some of your musicians, weren't you?
No.
Well, I saw Remley, Sammy, and Fletcher going around the course with you.
Yeah, but they weren't playing. Remley was carrying my bag.
Well, what was Sammy doing?
He was carrying Remley.
Well, what was Fletcher doing?
He was carrying the stuff that made it necessary for Sammy to carry Remley.
Oh, yes. Remley is your handicap.
He ain't no water hazard.
I know.
Hey, Jackson, how about you and me playing out at Tamarisk someday?
Okay, Phil, maybe we can make a match.
Yeah, what do you usually go around then?
Well, my handicap is... Hey, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Hey, Don... Now, watch me get him this time. Phil, ask me that again, will you?
Ask you what again?
What do you usually go around in?
Shorts or slacks, depending on the weather. Oh, Harris, Sammy may be carrying Remley, but you're carrying this program.
Phil, if that joke is carrying the program, I'd rather dragged a little bit. Anyway, I'll play golf with you anytime you want to.
Okay, Jackson, how much you want to bet?
I don't want to bet anything. All I want you to do is every time we get on the green, mark your ball with a dime.
Dime? Why?
I got a slice that'll make me a fortune. Say, Don, if you'd like to play a tamarisk sometime, I'll get you.
Hey, Jackson, I heard you and Don reciting poetry before.
So what?
Hey, I got one that's a fifth.
A poem?
Yeah. It's about the weather that we had yesterday. Listen to this. I was getting some sun. Then I went inside, 'cause the little white cloud sat down and cried.
Pretty good, you know. I expected some... Oh, hello, Dennis.
Hello, Mr. Benny. Hello, everybody.
Well, Dennis, I hope you're having as much fun in Palm Springs as we are.
I sure am, but boy, am I tired.
Tired? What have you been doing?
Well, last night I went to the movies and I had to stand for 2 hours.
That crowded, huh?
No, there was plenty of room.
Then why'd you have to stand in the movies?
I went to a drive-in and I didn't have a car.
Now, wait a minute, Dennis. How did you get into a drive-in without a car?
Oh, I was carrying an umbrella, and they thought I was a convertible.
Oh, stop being silly. What's that on your nose?
A windshield wiper.
What? Now, cut that out! Windshield wiper. I suppose that thing on your forehead is your license number.
No, Eddie Cantor's autograph.
Oh, yeah. Now, Dennis, stop being silly and answer me. Are you having a good time?
Oh, I'll say. Friday night, I went to the Chi-Chi and saw Sally Rand. I never laughed so hard in all my life.
You know, Don, the weather here has been so beautiful today. I think
wait
I may...
Wait a minute, hold it. Let's go back here a minute. Look, didn't you listen to what this kid just said?
I listened to it, heard it, and ignored it.
Well, I ain't going to ignore it. Dennis, you went to the Chi-Chi and saw Sally Rand's act?
Uh-huh.
The Sally Rand?
Uh-huh.
And when you finally saw Sally Rand's act, you, laughed?
Yeah, I was sitting up so close, those fans tickled.
Don't look to me for sympathy, Bill. Years of experience have taught me that the only way to get along with Dennis have nothing more to do with him than is necessary. Like this, for instance. Now, Dennis, we're doing a program, and you have to do a song.
Yes, sir.
What song are you going to sing?
The date boats are coming.
You mean shrimp boats.
This is Palm Springs, bud.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead and sing.
Take of all when I
Mistake, sung by Dennis Day and accompanied by Phil Harris and his Stumbling Tumbleweed Orchestra. And now, folks...
Hold it, Melvin. Just a minute. Just slow up a minute.
Huh?
I mean, look, I don't mind so much when we're at home, but when we're out of town, let's don't be making insulting remarks about the orchestra, huh?
Well, Phil, I got a right to make comments about your band. After all, who's the star of this show?
Well, when I see my paycheck, I know it ain't me.
Oh, stop complaining.
I'm not complaining, Jackson. It's just that I'd like to pay income tax like everybody else.
But
they don't even think I'm a citizen.
Phil, the only reason people don't think you're a citizen is because with that bottle of Lord Calvert in your hand all the time, you look like an Englishman. Such a long line for such a little laugh. So don't argue with me about money, salary, or... Come in.
Hello, Mr. Benny.
Well, Mr. Gibson. Mr. Kitzel, it's certainly nice seeing you. What are you doing here in Palm Springs?
Oh, I just came down for a little visit.
Oh, good, good. Where are you living?
At the Hacienda Paseo de la Sal.
The Hacienda Paseo de la Sal?
Sal is my brother-in-law.
Oh. Oh, he's married to your sister?
Yeah, her name is Hacienda.
Well, what about Paseo?
He's a silent partner.
Oh, I see. Well, tell me, Mr. Kitzel, is your wife is here with you?
Yes, and are we having fun? We go swimming, we play tennis, and you know this morning my wife rented a bicycle built for two.
Oh, and you both went for a ride, huh?
No, just her.
Then why did she get a bicycle built for two?
Believe me, she can use it.
Mr. Kitzel, you mean your wife is on the heavy side?
If it was only on the side, I wouldn't mind.
Oh, well, what's the difference? As long as you're in love with her, Mr. Kitzel, that's all that matters.
That's what I keep telling myself. Well, goodbye, Mr. Benny.
So long, Mr. Kitzel. Thanks for dropping in. I'll get it. Hello?
I have a long-distance call for Jack Benny.
This is Jack Benny.
It's Collect. Hello? Hello?
I'm here. A Collect call, huh? Operator, find out who's calling.
Just a moment. Mr. Benny will not accept the charges till he knows who's calling.
Tell him it's Lana Turner.
Rochester! I thought you'd be down here by now. Where are you calling from?
From Pomona.
Pomona? What'd you stop there for?
I got a flat tire.
Oh, that's too bad.
No, that's good. It was laying in the road, and it's better than the one we had on.
Oh.
If I find three more, I'll be there by morning.
Well, you better be here by morning. I'm going to play golf, and I want you to caddy for me.
Oh, boss, I hate to caddy for you at Palm Springs.
Stop complaining. Tamarisk is a very level course. There's nothing tough about it.
Nothing for you, but how about me? I have to carry a golf bag, 12 clubs, a basket of sandwiches, a gallon of lemonade, a first aid kit, and a parasol.
So what?
You don't need a caddy, you need a burrow.
Oh, Rochester, you don't carry so much.
I don't. Remember what happened last time I went out loaded down like that?
What happened?
An old prospector tied a rope around my neck and led me off into the mountains.
Why'd you go with him?
I couldn't see where I was until he unloaded me.
Lord, stop making things up. Anyway, I'm going to play golf in the morning, and I want you to caddy.
Okay, I'll do it, but do me a favor this time, will you?
What is it?
If we lose a ball, let's forget it. Those bloodhounds are hard to handle.
Okay, goodbye.
Goodbye.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, in honor of the opening of Palm Springs' newest golf course, Tamaris, we are going
Jack, before we go any further, I must tell you something, and I know you're going to be surprised.
Surprised? What is it, Don?
There's a friend of yours who also belongs to Tamarisk, and he'd like to come on and say a few words.
A friend of mine? Is it Mr. Anderson, the president of Tamarisk?
No.
Well, is it Ben Hogan, the pro at Tamarisk?
No.
Well, who is it?
Danny Kaye. Come on in, Danny.
Danny Kaye. Well, hello. Hello, Danny.
Hello, Jack Benny.
But, Danny, this is such a surprise coming right out on my program. It's...
Oh, stop stuttering. I'm not going to charge you for it.
Oh.
Now, Jack, the reason I'm here is... Well, because every time you come to Palm Springs, you always do an informal show. Isn't that right?
That's right.
Well, some of the boys at the club cooked up an idea that I'm sure you're going to like.
What is it?
Well, we decided to form a quartet and sing the song you wrote.
My song?
Mm-hmm.
When you say I beg your pardon, then I'll come back to you.
Suddenly I'm sick.
What?
Oh, anyway, Jack, the other three fellas are out outside. Can I call them in?
Three fellas, who are they?
Yeah, well, Frank Sinatra, George Burns, and Groucho Marx.
Frankie and Groucho. Hello, fellas.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, that's brilliant dialogue.
Well, welcome to the show, fellas, and if you say the magic word, you get a bottle of suntan oil.
Say, Jack, that reminds me.
Huh?
Jack?
What?
That reminds me.
Huh?
That bottle of suntan oil you sold me was much too greasy, and boy, was I embarrassed.
Why, what happened?
Well, yesterday when I put some on, I slipped right out of my suit.
No kidding.
Look, fellas, I came here to sing, so let Jordan get it over with, okay?
Okay.
When I say I beg your pardon.
Hold it, hold it.
I say.
Groucho, that's me.
I may sing lousy, but I'm grammatically correct.
I'm sorry.
I'm Groucho.
Now, look, fellas.
Fellas, come on. Now, let's sing Jack's song.
And, fellas, I want to tell you how much I appreciate your coming over to do it. No one but real friends, real pals, would give up a Sunday afternoon just to come over here and do this wonderful
Jack,
song. What?
Shut up.
Oh.
All right, fellas, let's take it.
Now, what key are we going to sing it in, Danny?
It'll help if we all take different ones.
Look, boy.
All right, fellas, let's go. Can we have a nice introduction, please? Now.
When I say I beg your pardon,
then I'll come
back to you. When you ask me to forgive you, I'll return.
Like the swallows at Serrano, return to Capistrano.
For you, my heart will always, always yearn.
Will always yearn. Understand. If the harvest moon will pledge our love. And now, honey, child, don't be listening to anybody else. Just we're parting, went back to whence we started. And sweetheart, I'll come back to you.
Bum, 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 bum. When I see a big party, and then I'll come back to you.
darling. Though we're parted. Come back to when we've started.
And sweetheart, I'll come back to. Sweetheart, I'll come back to.
The Jack Benny program on Tuned to Yesterday from March 2nd, 1952 on CBS, closing out this hour of comedy on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. And until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeBonier. It's been a pleasure.